You are listening to Flash F1's Fast Pass with Gil and Mark.
Welcome, listeners, to another edition of Flash F1's Fast Pass. This is where Mark and I give you a little bit of information, news and facts about the upcoming race, and any other highlights that are important to the upcoming race. But before I get started with the rest of the Fast Pass, I just want to thank Nicholas Latifi for his time again doing our last special podcast interview. Mark and I are really grateful to him for lending his time in talking about Formula 2, Formula 1, everything that he goes through on a race weekend, just the whole environment. I also want to thank our listeners, our Flash F1 listeners, our Flashers, for checking out the podcast, for supporting us and listening to that interview that Mark and I did with Nicholas Latifi. Thank you, everybody.
It was a great interview, not because of what you and I necessarily contributed, but rather because Nicholas was such a great interview. He was very humble and he shared a lot of really great information. And it's funny because when we were recording that podcast, I wasn't as focused on his message, but rather, okay, what question are we going to ask next? Is it recording okay? But when I actually went back and listened to the podcast later, I'm like, this is a really informative podcast. He's sharing a lot of stuff that I didn't know. So I agree. Thank you to him for joining us. We have some other great interviews lined up, which is also very, very exciting. But also thank you to our listeners who helped us make that the most popular and most downloaded podcast we've ever done. So thank you very, very much.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
The Fast Pass is all about giving our listeners a little bit of energy, a little bit of news, a little bit of gossip, and something to keep them entertained between races. Obviously, we're going to cover all the big races. We're going to talk about what happened, the drama on the track, the drama off the track. Hopefully, there is some. But these podcasts are more about just general updates, news, etc. On that note, one of the things that does make Formula One very special is the amount of time it's been around. The sport has a tremendous legacy. It has a tremendous history. It predates the Second World War. And due to that fact, there's a lot of fantastic people that have been building blocks in the construction of the sport. Unfortunately, again, given how old the sport is, we often see the passing of these legendary individuals. A couple of days ago, we lost Niki Lauda. Niki Lauda, for our listeners that are maybe newer to the sport or aren't particularly familiar with it, was an Austrian racer. He raced initially with Ferrari. He closed his career with McLaren. He won a championship in 1975. He won another driver's championship in 1977. And incredibly, after a two-year hiatus, he came back with McLaren and won another driver's title in 1984. Perhaps the most compelling part of his career was that at the 1976 German Grand Prix at the Nürburgring, he was involved in a catastrophic accident. His car burst into flames. He was exposed to toxic fumes, and he was put in a position where he was quite frankly near death. And when you consider medical technology in the 1970s, the safety of the track, the safety of the cars, it's really a miracle that he survived at all. Despite the accident and despite the severe burns that he suffered as a result of the crash, he actually made it back to the track just 6 weeks later and chased down James Hunt right till the end of the season before ultimately losing the 1976 Drivers' Championship. The one strong recommendation that I have for all of our listeners is if you haven't seen it, even if you're really only a fringe Formula One fan, please go and track down the Ron Howard-directed 2013 film Rush. It documents really the career and the duel between Niki Lauda and James Hunt. It is phenomenal. It documents and shows the entire crash process, the strides and efforts that he made to overcome his injuries and get back on the track. It is a phenomenal film. And for me, perhaps the most impressive part is that it got made at all, simply because obviously Formula One doesn't have a huge broad appeal, but it is spectacular and very, very well done. Gil, did you have any thoughts on the passing of Niki Lauda?
What I'm going to say resonates through every other racer, everyone who's heard of racing and drivers, and famously Niki Lauda. He is one of iconic. He's an iconic figure in the racing sport. When I heard, it was to me the same feeling I got when I heard that Prince or David Bowie passed away. It's just one of those iconic legends in the sport, in the art that is no longer with us. And I know that a lot of my friends who watch Formula One or a longtime race enthusiasts were messaging me right away saying, hey, did you know we passed? Are you talking about it in your podcast? So this is what we're doing now to, you know, just keep on having Niki Lauda's memory go on.
And I think for me, maybe what one of the more shocking things was is if you watch the sport, he's actively, or he was actively involved in the Mercedes garage. He was consistently being interviewed. He was sharing his opinions. He was available for interviews, all of those kind of things. Since 2012, he'd actually been acting as a non-executive chairman for the Mercedes team. Allegedly, and I can't confirm this, but by all accounts, he was very actively involved in the negotiations that brought Lewis Hamilton that team. He was very much along with Lewis and along with Toto Wolff. He was very much the face of that organization, and he'd been there ever since they won their first title in 2014.
He was pretty much the father figure, the grandfather figure of that whole team. That's how I saw him. You know, every time he was sitting in the pits, watching the race with Toto right beside him, and you know, just looking after his team and his boys, he just seemed like that grandfather figure of the, for the team.
It was also probably important for him to be there simply because he lent some credence and some balance to the organization, because he was a driver that went out there doing exactly what he and the team were asking of Rosberg, of Lewis Hamilton, of Valtteri Bottas. The immense amount of respect that they must have had for this guy, knowing that he's a three-time champion himself, he won with two different teams spread across two different eras, he overcame a horrific injury, and he was racing in cars and on tracks that were nowhere near as safe as what they drive on today. I think there must have been an immense amount of respect there as well.
Oh, definitely. The cars back then were really dangerous.
Another great reason to watch the film Rush, if you have the opportunity, there's fantastic CGI that really brings to life the experience of watching a Formula One race in the 1970s and the early 1980s. It's beautiful. It's a great piece of art. Really documents his career well. It documents the rivalry that he had with James Hunt and really gives some insight into the glamour and maybe the not so glamorous side of the sport in the 1970s. But if anything, this film does a phenomenal job of documenting his commitment to the sport. And I love the term that you used, the art. For him, Formula One was an art. And the film really documents exactly how committed he was to it and how he treated it as such. And I think in parallel to that, or as a contrast, they document James Hunt, who was also an incredibly talented British driver, but who maybe wasn't committed in the same way, and his career went in a slightly different direction despite his 1976 title. But very, very sad. Obviously, to your point, a big part of the sport for a very long time.
Yeah, and as Mark mentioned earlier, if you haven't seen Rush, check it out on Netflix, download it, rent it at a video box, anything. It was really well done. It showed Niki's driving career really well in the early days, and Thor from the Avengers is in it.
So to kind of wrap up on the Niki Lauda piece, and this obviously won't be the end, because we'll want to continue to cherish his memory for his contributions to the sport. But ultimately, three drivers' championships, 1975, 1977, 1984. His first win was in 1974 at the Spanish Grand Prix. He won a couple wins at Monaco. Ultimately, he took 25 wins in his career, 24 poles, 54 podiums. And the really interesting thing is, before he went to McLaren and wrapped up that third driver's title, he actually had a two-year hiatus away from the sport as well. On that note, though, I think we're going to play out this segment. We're going to play in the sounds of the trailer for Rush, just so you can get a sense of the film and the drama, and we'll pick it up in a couple of minutes.
There's a lie that all drivers tell themselves. Death is something that happens to other people. And that's how you find the courage to get in the car in the first place. But more powerful than fear itself is the will to win.
Who's that?
It's Niki Lauda. He's just been signed by Ferrari.
Showdown between you and Niki is all anyone wants to see.
Oh, made it safer.
The risk of death turns people on.
Now for the track review.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Monaco. If there is an event on the track that has more opulence, more glitter, more glamour than this one, I don't know which one it is. Perhaps the crown jewel of all of the events on the Formula One calendar, Monaco is by far and away the most transcendent weekend we've experienced ever when it comes to Formula One racing. The event itself has actually been staged since 1929. This is the pretty close, I believe, or if not the 90th anniversary of the running of this event. The country, Monaco, is actually kind of interesting itself. I think there's a lot of assumptions that it's in some way an extension of France or a French Commonwealth. It's not. It's actually a small principality on the southern shores of France, on the ocean. It's a tiny, tiny country. It's about 2 square kilometers, home to about 40,000 people, but that population explodes on the weekend of the Grand Prix. The event itself is staged on a track that has strong resemblance to the track that was used originally back in the 1920s. Ultimately, though, it's a little bit tight, and I think that's okay. Qualifying makes a big, big appearance on this one. Gil, your thoughts on Monaco? Anything I'm missing other than the fact that it's a beautiful setting, the rich and the famous come, there's a lot of glitter, glamour, opulence. What am I missing?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to do a Robin Leach impression, you know, lifestyles of the rich and famous. This is a high-profile race, and the city is very rich in itself. Prince Albert is always at every race.
Yep.
And like you said, this is the track is a street circuit come Formula One time. It's a 3.3-kilometer street track with 19 turns with one DRS zone. This track's got a lot of famous areas, you know, the corners themselves. You've got the hairpin at the Grand Hotel, and going through that tunnel, you've got the Nouvelle Chicane right after. And these are areas where a lot of accidents or a lot of action happens. And then another turn right at Raskas. They're always talking about a lot. These three areas are really highlighted in the race.
I think something that's really important for newer fans is the fact that qualifying at Monaco is oftentimes kind of considered the race because the track is so tight and it's so twisty and it's so difficult to overtake that more often than not, the driver that takes pole is going to win the race. So there's an extra degree of value and emphasis on qualifying, which in itself can be really, really exciting. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about Nico in a couple minutes because I know you want to bring that one up, but qualifying is obviously a really, really, really big deal. The other thing that we do see a lot of is safety cars because of the tight corners, because of how tight the track is. Inevitably, there's going to be some collisions. Some people are going to hit corners, et cetera, et cetera. So inevitably, we see safety cars. And those also add a degree of excitement as well, simply because they help to back up the field. And when you have that restart, it's kind of a mad scramble to overtake or ground up on some of your competitors. But overall, despite the fact that it's super, super tight, a little bit twisty, just the setting itself makes for really, really great viewing. And to your point, Prince Albert's there. His family's there. They're usually at Parc Fermé. They're usually on the stage handing out the medal after the race itself. But even just the scene of the yachts, the biggest yachts that you can imagine docking and people sunbathing and taking in the race, it's an unbelievable setting and it's absolutely a crown jewel of the event. Now, that said, I think just to kind of run through, because again, it's a very old event, McLaren as a team have won here 15 times, Ferrari 9, Lotus 7, Red Bull and Mercedes as newer teams. I think they've obviously got deeper roots, but in their current incarnation, Red Bull's won here 4 times. Mercedes has won here 4 times as well. The top drivers, Ayrton Senna was absolutely the king of Monaco. He won here 6 times. Michael Schumacher and Graham Hill have each won here 5 times. Alain Prost, and you corrected me on my pronunciation before the show, has won here 4 times. And just as a reference amongst the current drivers, Lewis Hamilton has won here 2 times. Now, I know you're itching to talk about this. Qualifying 2014, maybe take us back to that one.
Yeah, and you've mentioned it earlier where qualifying does seem to be the most exciting part before the race, or which overshadows the race anyway. 2014 qualifying, that sticks in my mind because I think I've mentioned to you a couple of times before that you were totally unaware of, but that was the year where Nico Rosberg was qualifying. Towards the end of Q3, he had already had the fastest time, and for him to secure his pole, For me, it was controversial. Everybody looked at it as him purposely running off the track or going into the runoff or the exit yeah, off of one of the runoffs where it ended up backing up the rest of the drivers and letting the time run down so no one else could actually qualify, get a faster lap than Rosberg, which ultimately secured his pole. I believe he won that year. If I recall, I believe he may have won. But
so just, keep talking okay. while I bring up Google.
It's just one of those things where it just seemed underhanded that how he ended up winning that race.
What do you know? Nico Rosberg won that race.
Yep.
Yeah, it was crazy. And for whatever reason, I'd forgotten about it. But I think one of the things that a lot of us forget is that 2016 was this incredible seesaw battle between Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. Nico started the season with 4 straight wins, coming off 3 straight wins at the end of 2015. He and Lewis went back and forth all season. It came down to the final race of the year. Lewis won. Nico was second, but he'd secured enough points to win the championship. I think if you look back on that year, had Lewis not had that engine failure in Malaysia, he probably would have won 2016. But I think a lot of us look back on 2016 as really being this really great title fight. A lot of people forget that 2014 was almost as close. And this could have been one of those situations where, hey, had he not hashtag cheated to win the pole in qualifying, you know what? Maybe Lewis wins qualifying. Maybe he takes those extra couple of points and maybe he kind of jets away with the lead. I mean, he won the championship that year anyways, but it was a little bit shady. And I encourage people to look at this because this is something that Gil has been talking about for a while. And we took a look at it YouTube before. He's dominating qualifying. He put down a great qualifying time. He goes into a corner, which he successfully cut through a number of times. Oh no, I'm on my brakes hard. Instead of going right into the corner and continuing my lap, I'm going to go left into this runoff area. And now it's unsafe for anyone else to proceed with their laps. So he basically runs out the clock and nobody else has the opportunity to put in a faster lap than him. So he wins pole by default. Super, super shady, but yeah, it's just one of those things that makes the sport interesting.
Yeah, and that particular year, 2014, I think for me, that was the year that for me kicked off the intense rivalry between Rosberg and Hamilton. I think they got more aggressive right from that point
on.
Yeah, all the way up to 2016 when Rosberg's goal was to just win the championship. And once he did, he was out.
Yeah, other things that I remember about Monaco, 2016, I remember, and you probably remember this as well, Daniel Ricciardo goes into the pits. And the mechanics, the techs aren't ready. They don't have his tires. And he's sitting there and they're scrambling in the back to get the tires ready. So that's something that sticks in my memory. And I remember how unhappy he was at the podium celebration later. Probably not a surprise. He actually won the race last season. And one of the things that I learned recently is that Red Bull actually floats in a custom-made, what they call an energy center, but it's basically a floating party center. It's basically a big cube that they call the Red Bull Energy Center. They float this thing down from Italy, dock it up, and they host massive parties there all weekend, including some fairly glamorous affairs. But yeah, Daniel Ricciardo won last year. He dived into the pool on the top of the Red Bull Energy Center, much to the delight of his fans and the Australians and the rest of his team. But other than that, this year, what are your thoughts? Who do you think looks good this year? It's not a track that necessarily plays well to the Mercedes cars, which love those wide open sweeping runs.
Well, before I get into that, with this venue being very high profile and being a rich venue, we'll be seeing some superstars. I recall seeing Justin Bieber at the Monaco race a year or two ago. We're going to probably see a lot of high-profile celebrities at the Monaco race.
But... And the TV production crew are never shy to point them out. They'll always show them. And I remember, and I believe it was 2016, but Hamilton wins the race, and he has two of his good friends, Gabrielle Union, a.k.a. Bad Boys 2, and Dwayne Wade, hashtag Miami Heat, 3-time champion, both in the crowd celebrating with them. But yeah, it's definitely a race that really attracts a lot of glamorous people. And I think it transcends the sport. So a lot of people tune into this one and attend the race that probably don't have a lot of concern or consideration for the sport outside of it. But for the rich and the glamorous, it's really the place to be on this weekend in May.
Yeah, and now getting to my pick, getting back to your question there. You know what? I'm feeling Bottas for this one. You know, he's been on a run, and I just want him to, you know, succeed and get the win for this one. Second for me is probably Max Verstappen. He's already proven that he's got the fastest lap here on this track. He's very comfortable with this track, and he's very aggressive. With this being a tight racetrack, we'll see what he can do. And let's hope that either Lewis Hamilton comes in, or we'll see how the Ferraris play out. There's not going to be a lot of straightaways for this particular track for them to keep a certain pace. They're going to pretty much have to be smart in their strategy in order to beat Mercedes for this upcoming race.
Since you asked, I think Max Verstappen has a chance at this track. And I think there was really a lot of disappointment about a previous qualifying snafu that he had at this track, which is well documented in Netflix's Drive to Survive. But I got to think that if he's going to pick up a win early in the season, it's going to be here. He's competed well here before. I think the track is suited for his car. The discrepancy in power between the Red Bull and the Ferrari and their Mercedes will be muted here simply because everyone's going to be braking and taking corners. So it's really more of a tactical, strategic drive. So I think there's an opportunity for him. I have a feeling that Mercedes may not qualify on top, but that said, every time I thought that's going to happen this year, they've shocked, maybe not shocked the world, but they've surprised me and gone and qualified 1-2. So we'll see if that streak continues as well. And you and I talk off air a lot about the fact that we're five races into the season and we've had a Mercedes 1-2 every single race, which is a record. So we've never seen anything quite like that before. So it'll be interesting to see if they can continue that streak as well. Anything else from you? I've got some really great news and gossip and some mailbag questions, which I think we'll save for after Monaco on Sunday. But anything else you wanted to touch on before we end today?
No, I think we're good. You know, the Fast Pass is supposed to be a short little podcast just to give you some information. The real highlights of this podcast is literally Niki Lauda, first and foremost, and thanking Nicholas Latifi for our previous special interview podcast. And again, to the Flash F1 listeners, our Flashers, thank you again for listening, for supporting, and continuing supporting this podcast. So
with that, hopefully, and I fully expect to see it this weekend, will really be a celebration of Niki Lauda, especially given the fact that he's won at this event twice. I'm sure that Mercedes and I'm sure that the rest of the grid are going to celebrate him, whether it's armbands or some sort of special celebration before and after the track. And I'm sure the winner will dedicate the race to him as well, which really speaks to the class of the racers. So hopefully we'll see that. With that, I've got nothing else. Here's to a fantastic race weekend. I'm really excited for qualifying. I'm excited for the race.
And I'm excited for what Formula One is going to do to honor Niki Lauda.
On that note, I've got nothing else.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.
This is Sarah signing off at Flash F1 with Gil and Mark. Thanks for listening. Join us next time as we recap the legendary Monaco Grand Prix.